When James VI went south to London to be crowned James I of England, he also became head of the Church of England. Now, the Reformation had affected the two countries in totally separate ways. The Church of England was an entirely different system of reformed Christian worship from that in Scotland. The English Church largely accepted the philosophies of the German Martin Luther, whereas Scotland adopted the ideas of the French philosopher Calvin. The great Scottish reformer was the awe-inspiring preacher John Knox, a tremendously influential character in the formation of his country's new religion. The basic differences were these. Before the Reformation, of course, the Pope was the head of the Church, and he appointed archbishops and bishops. Now, after the Reformation, in England, the King was the head of the Church, and he appointed the bishops. In other words, the organisation of the Church was still the same. And of course, by appointing bishops, the King could control the Church. But the Church of Scotland was entirely different. It was a much more democratic kind of organisation. The ministers were chosen from among the people, and the Church was governed by a general assembly of these ministers. Now, when James became monarch of both countries, it was natural on his part that he should try to bring the two churches closer together. He gently introduced the idea of nominal bishops to the Church of Scotland before he went, and then, once he was crowned in London, he began to strengthen the position of these Scottish bishops. But he knew his countrymen well, and he was clever enough not to interfere too much with their Presbyterian system. But when James died, he was succeeded by his son, Charles I, who hardly remembered the Scotland in which he'd been born, and he tried to impose his will upon the Scottish Church even more than his father had done. This was a time of great national upheaval. The Scots, deeply religious, felt very, very strongly about their Presbyterian way of worship, and Charles didn't realise just how strong those feelings were. Many people throughout the land signed the National Covenant, in which they declared their loyalty to Charles in all matters, except that concerning religious worship. In 1638, the General Assembly of the Church abolished the bishops who had been appointed. It was open defiance of the Crown. It put many Scots into a tremendous dilemma. On the one hand, they were fiercely loyal to their king, but on the other hand, they could not, they would not accept his interference in their Presbyterian worship. There followed a period known as the Bishops' Wars, when Charles tried to impose his will, tried to force bishops upon the Church of Scotland. And the Scots, so many of them, fought against the king to whom they were loyal in everything except this one matter of religious observance. Finally, he relented, and in 1646 promised to end the episcopal system, the bishops he'd been trying to impose. But then came the Civil War in England. Those who would support the monarch against those who would have power with Parliament, led, of course, by Oliver Cromwell. The Royalists fought the Parliamentarians and at first gained success after success. The Parliamentarians appealed to the Scots to come and fight on their side. In return, a covenant was signed guaranteeing Scotland its freedom of worship and an agreement to impose a Presbyterian system on England as well. And so the Scots came in successfully with Oliver Cromwell and his forces in the Battle of Marston Moor. Cromwell went on, in fact, to defeat the king, but then went too far. In 1649, he executed Charles I. Now, when Cromwell cut off the head of the King of England, of course, he also cut off the head of the King of Scotland, and the Scots were horrified. They had been agreeable to fight for their religious beliefs, but they had not in any way intended that he should be executed. But nevertheless, they saw the chance here to end their conflict of loyalty between king and faith. The king's son, Charles II, was in exile, and they invited him to Scotland, pressed him into agreeing to Presbyterian freedom, and when he'd done so, they crowned him King of Scotland. Now this angered Cromwell, and so he invaded. Scottish forces countered by invading England, but finally the Scots were defeated, and Charles II was forced once more to escape into exile. Cromwell took over. Cromwell ruled both countries as Lord Protector. Britain was a republic. Oliver Cromwell died in 1658, and in 1660, Charles II was restored once more to the thrones of England and Scotland. The monarchy was re-established. But when Charles returned, he didn't keep his promises pressed from him as a youth regarding Scottish Presbyterian freedom. Once more, bishops were forced upon the church, and the newly reinstated Scottish Parliament took away the right of the congregations to choose their own ministers. So many people began to worship away from the churches altogether, in small groups, often on remote hillsides, little groups known as conventicles. But in 1670, they were declared treasonable, and there began a period of conflict known as the Wars of the Covenanters. These people, when they could be found, were persecuted and imprisoned, while others fought back against their king. A bitter chapter in Scotland's past. Charles II eventually died, leaving no heirs, and so his brother became the next king. His brother James, James VII of Scotland and the Second of England. He produced what were known as letters of indulgence, which more or less pardoned those in dispute over matters of religion. But he wouldn't support a totally free Presbyterian church. There was indeed the question of his own religion. It's generally considered that James was Catholic, and it was largely this matter of religion that finally forced his abdication and his exile into France as the Protestant Dutch prince William of Orange deposed him. He had had two daughters by his first marriage, Mary and Anne, and by his second marriage, a young son, James. And when he went, it was his young son that he took with him. Mary, meanwhile, had married William of Orange, her cousin, and Parliament agreed that William and Mary should rule as joint king and queen. And so, in 1689, King William III, William of Orange, and Queen Mary commenced their reign. And the settlement of the Church of Scotland was signed the following year, making it once more democratically free. But many Scots, especially those in the Highlands, and there were still a good many Catholics in the Highlands of Scotland, many felt they were no longer being ruled by their rightful king. They considered that James in exile was still their king. And so there was widespread discontent and the beginnings of the Jacobite movement. Now this term crops up a lot in this period, the Jacobites. Very simply, the Latin for James is Jacobus. In French, the word is Jacques, and supporters of James became known as Jacobites. The unrest in the Highlands produced the famous victory at the Battle of Killiecrankie in 1689, and then, in 1692, the infamous Massacre of Glencoe. It was a bloody incident which was to have tremendous repercussions throughout Scotland, and in its way led to the beginning of the end of the Highlander. But that's another story.